Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
Hi, everybody. Good to meet you online. My name's Carl Bushby, and I have spent the last 22 years trying to forge the longest single continuous expedition on foot. From the southern tip of South America back to London in England. Trying to do it without using any form of transport. So I'm only allowed to walk. I'm not allowed to use any boats, planes, cars, etc. Oh, there we go. There's a map. We almost got all the map on there as well. So you can see we started way down at the southern tip, mainland, the Americas, all the way up the Americas, then over the Bering Strait. And then it takes me down through Siberia, Russia, and into Central Asia. And I ended up on the border with Iran before the COVID virus calamity began. Before this, I was an ex-British paratrooper. So I'd spent like 12 years in the British Army, which I think set me up pretty nicely for doing something on this scale. And the whole idea to do something on this scale really began while I was in the army.
Could you tell the kids a little bit what inspired you to take on such a massive goal and try and accomplish that goal?
It was just a huge challenge. And I had an affinity for horizons for a long time. And I would get a real kick out of a good horizon. And I've always wondered, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that being British paratroopers, our job primarily was kind of like used to be dropped behind enemy lines and to be self-sufficient. And that meant we had to be very fit and very capable. So the ethos of the regiment lended itself very well to thinking about long-term challenges in those types of circumstances of a long distances, being self-sufficient. So that all kind of played into it. And we're always challenging ourselves with bigger and better and going further. So for a long time, I pondered on, well, just how far can you go? How far could an individual push yourself? I believed something around the world was always capable. I knew what I was capable of. I had a lot of confidence that under the right circumstances, theoretically speaking, it was doable. And eventually I started looking at routes, various distances across continents. And those distances would take, you know, maybe 5 years, 6 years tops. And I never really found something significantly impressive that I was willing to kind of leave the army. So to give up a career, because I'd spent 12 years in the army ultimately, until one day I got a birthday card from my father, and inside the card he'd written a note, and he had talked about the possibility of that, because my father was special forces, and there was a couple of special forces guys who had talked about the possibility of walking from London to New York over something called the Bering Land Bridge, which I'd never heard of before. And while I'd been looking at my maps and planning routes and thinking about it, I really hadn't heard or come across this notion of the Bering Land Bridge. Of course, it's not really a Bering Land Bridge. It used to be a Bering Land Bridge, maybe 25,000 to 20,000 years ago, during, you know, the last maximum glacial expanse. But now, basically, you had like 57 miles of open water between Alaska and Russia. But with that as a theoretical possibility, then I suddenly realized that all these continents could be joined. And I think when I got to that point and I thought, oh, I don't know why anybody would want to stop in New York. Why not take it all the way down to the bottom? And that's how it began. I think once I drew that on a map and I suddenly realized that one of the world's greatest challenges was there right in front of me and I couldn't let it go. And when I brought that to the table in the army and said, look, guys, I think this is possible, they kind of laughed at me and said, no, that's stupid. That's ridiculous. And that was more of a challenge. I think telling a young paratrooper that he can't do that, you know, obviously then I'm going to go and do it. And that's pretty much how it played out, almost like a bad bet in the bar. And as that challenge grew, I just ran with it. And before I knew it, I was packing my bags and on my way.
So what could you tell the kids? I mean, I was trying to research. There's like less than like a handful of people who've ever made that crossing and lived to tell about the tale. Like what kind of goes through your mind when you're doing something so, you know, daunting?
I mean, the Bering Strait really was the crux of the entire expedition. It's kind of that halfway point. And the day that I set off on this journey, there was no recorded crossing of the Bering Strait, which was a bit of a problem. I thought that we would probably have to go further north using the polar ice cap and try and drop down into Russia. But unbeknown to me at the time, there was a Russian team, a father and son team, a guy called Dmitry Sparrow, who was like a famous Russian polar explorer. And he made it on his fourth attempt, literally at the time that I began my expedition. And I learned of this much later, which was a huge relief because it meant it was theoretically possible, but terribly difficult. No one had ever made it from the Americas to Russia. And the guys, the Russians that made it across the Bering Strait, they'd almost died of exposure at one point. A polar bear had attacked their tent and they had to fight it off with a gun. So it's a fun place. And the Bering Strait, unlike the Arctic ice, the Bering Strait is like a choke point between two big oceans. So you've got the Arctic Ocean, the Bering Sea. So there's a lot of movement, a lot of water being forced through that gap, and it's a very dynamic place. So the ice is never stable, it's never solid. It's always a combination of mixed broken ice that's always moving in unpredictable ways. High winds what also drives the ice. It's just a gnarly place. And so it really was a serious challenge. And for someone like me to arrive in Alaska with no previous real Arctic experience, again, the locals kind of laughed and said, you know, this is foolhardy. You're going to get yourself in trouble. You're probably going to get yourselves killed, but you're not going to make it to Russia. Nobody gave us a cat in hell's chance. And I teamed up with another adventure racer, a French-American guy called Dmitry Kiefer. And together we put a plan based on all these other failed attempts. We'd even spoken to people who tried it the year before us. They'd spent 8 days on the ice, got dragged all the way south, didn't make any progress west towards Russia, and then eventually got rescued. One of them nearly died during that experience. So a couple of harsh lessons. We looked at how everyone else had tried, why they'd failed, and we've designed our plan based on that. And ultimately, we got very lucky. We got very lucky. Not only were we equipped, willing mentally, equipped to try and do our best, but we had the weather on our side. And at one point, we found ourselves stuck on the American side, pretty much how we imagined, kind of in the water, in the ice, unable to make any progress, getting dragged north, which was better than getting dragged south. And I thought to myself the day that we actually stepped onto the ice that, you know, this is the way it's going to be. We're probably going to fail a couple of times. I always imagined we'd hit the Bering Strait and bounce off it like a brick wall. We'd end up back in Alaska, lick our wounds, reorganize, learn the lesson, and then replan and give it another go. And I thought that would probably happen a few times. Wasn't quite expecting to make it the first time, to be honest. But conditions had set themselves up pretty good. We had one of the coldest winters in 40 years, which means ice was at it, was good. We had good ice conditions, a lot of it, which is good. And we had 1 week on the Bering Strait where the wind stopped, which is almost unheard of. It's one of the windiest places in the world. And we had cold, very cold conditions, which was perfect because when we stepped onto the Bering Strait, temperatures were about 0 degrees Celsius, 32 Fahrenheit. And then they dropped dramatically during that time, during those first days, to about minus 35 degrees Celsius. And that starts to put the surface on the sea ice. Sea ice doesn't freeze until it gets very cold. kind of like down to the minus 30, minus 40 because of its salt water. And once you start to get a surface on sea ice, then we were able to actually start making progress. Other than that, we're spending most of our time just splashing around in this kind of semi-frozen sea water slash, it's like a giant slurpee. So when you're in it, it's hard to even move because it's like a soup effect and it just clings to you. And once we got that surface, then we're able to make progress. Before we knew it, we were crossing the data line into Russia. And that was just amazing. Way more than I ever imagined we'd get first time. And then, you know, it took us 14 days, but eventually we arrived in Russia, which became the first recorded crossing from America to Russia. Just mind-blowing, really. And the, with the weather conditions the way they were, I mean, I always talk about it's like being Moses and watching the Red Sea part. I mean, it was just absolutely spectacular. It was just, it couldn't have been better. That's how it felt at the time, and it all worked.
Well, you know, it's a really exciting journey to read about, and it's something that I personally have followed for a while. And we don't want any kids out here trying to do anything dangerous or anything like that. This is all about setting a goal and hard work and following through with accomplishing that goal. So, Carl, do you mind if some of the kids ask you some questions?
No, absolutely.
We have Alejandra in Spain, and you had all kinds of great questions. Feel free to pick one of your questions and ask one of them, Alejandra. Unmuting her. There you go.
Hi.
Hola.
Well, I have two questions. The first one, it's which will the next place that you will go after you're right now?
Yeah, right now it's difficult because of COVID. And the problem I'm having is all the borders are closed. So I'm officially, I've stopped and I've planted my flag in Turkmenistan. Turkmenistan there, if you look at Central Asia and you've got the Caspian Sea, right below the Caspian Sea, you've got Iran. And just next to Iran, off to the east there, you've got Turkmenistan. And I'm on the border with Iran in Turkmenistan. But unfortunately, the borders are closed and I can't get back in. So we're kind of waiting to see how the COVID situation is going to play out, hoping that the vaccines are going to change some of these dynamics politically. But right now, like most people in the world, I'm just forced to sit and wait to see what happens. We're looking at the possibility of going back north into Russia. That's north of the Caspian Sea. But ideally, what I want to do is go through Iran. Whether or not that's going to be possible right now, we don't know. So plan A is going to be Iran. Plan into Turkey. Plan B is going to be up into Russia, then down through the Caucasus, Georgia, and then into Turkey. So we've got to go all the way around the top of the Caspian, which adds like about 2,000 kilometers to my journey. Probably at least another year, which kind of sucks. But that's what we might have to do, depending on a couple of things. A, you know, the whole calculus on the how long it's going to take for borders to open. B, whether Russia will let me back in, because we've had a couple of issues there. So we'll see. But I find myself in an unusually difficult place right now. It's kind of so close to Europe, but there's this line of geopolitical issues and you know, this virus that's kind of brought me to a standstill. So here I am.
We have a question from Rocco, and Rocco, I believe you are in Italy, sir. Correct me if I'm wrong on that one. Let's see if he can unmute.
No, go. I'm in Spain.
Sorry, friend. What's your question again?
Did you ever lose motivation?
No, not at all. I've always, it's been very clear in my mind what needs to be done. I think mission setting, right from the get-go, it was there was no out clause in this. I always viewed this as it was doable. And if you have the right mindset, then when you come across a problem or an obstacle, you don't think about, oh, well, that's it. You know, we tried. There was no try. And if you have the right mindset, then every time you hit an obstacle, even no matter how bad that obstacle looked, and we faced a couple of really you know, strong obstacles politically and environmentally, like the Bering Strait, or problems with various countries on visa bans and things like this. But if you have the right mindset, then it's not about, well, we tried. It's about, well, how do we get around this obstacle? There's always a way. You just have to have the determination and the patience to find those ways. And that's been, I think, one of the most powerful lessons on this journey, the amount of obstacles we've overcome of all kinds, of all nature, to get where we are. And, you know, we face some pretty overwhelming obstacles right now. But again, we're confident that we can find a way. It might take a little time, but who cares? That's fine. As long as I'm alive, we've got time. We've got all the time in the world. So we'll just do what we got to do to achieve those aims, achieve those goals.
And we have our final question. This is from Mev in Italy. Mev, you should be able to unmute. Go ahead and ask one of your questions.
Thank you. Hi, Carl. Nice to meet you. My question is, I was wondering this. What did you think when you started this adventure, and what will you say when you finish it?
Wow. Good question. I mean, day one on this expedition was a little overwhelming. I remember stepping onto the road in Chile that the morning that I was about to begin, 1st of November, 1998. And it's an unusual feeling to be looking down a road that is about 36,000 miles in 12 years, at least. You know, that's how we calculated it at the time. It's a powerful feeling. It's a scary feeling, but it's also a very exciting feeling. I remember a feeling of huge relief because it had been so much work to get this thing, to make this thing reality, to get to that point. There's an awful lot of work just to get to the point where you're there on the start line. So there's a massive feeling of relief. There was a huge feeling of freedom, because you are now completely on your own. You have no backup, no sponsors. You're not responsible to anybody. It's you and the whole world, and it's just there. And from that point on, you make the decisions on where you go, how you go, when you go. But the mission itself was so overwhelming that it was very hard to really comprehend, I think, just how far, you know, those distances didn't mean much to me. And I don't think it was until maybe after the first year that the distance thing really started to impact me. And I remember getting to and just beyond Santiago, Chile, and it felt like a lifetime at that point. So I've been on the ground a year, been through a number of adventures and struggled and managed to get to Santiago, and then realized I'd barely scratched the surface of this thing. And I remember that hitting me pretty hard. And then I remember at that point, never thinking about the whole journey, but mentally decompartmentalizing the journey into small sections and focusing only on the next waypoint, the next town, the next city, but never thinking about the whole thing. And when you do that, everything becomes a lot easier, and you just focus on the next target, and that's it. Enjoy life.
So before we let you go, is there any advice you could give these kids as they go off into the world and kind of discover what they want to do and accomplish big goals in their own lives? What kind of advice can you give to them?
I mean, know what you want to do, first of all. That helps, because that can be difficult. Pick a big goal. Pick yourself a challenge, because if you pick a big enough goal, what you'll find is that you will be raised to the occasion. You will yourself will find a way to meet those goals. And every step of that way, you're improving yourself, and you'd be surprised at what you can do. What I found in the world is that people dramatically underestimate what they are capable of, because normally they lack the self-confidence. And I think with a bit of self-confidence, understanding where your limits are, setting those goals high, you'll be amazed at what comes your way and how many doors you can open. and how that will improve your life. So you should definitely never be afraid of setting yourself big goals. Hey, aim high. Aim high and you'll be amazed at what will happen. It'll, you know, again, believe in yourself. And there's always people going to be putting you down and they don't mean anything. They're the last people in the world you want to ever listen to. Surround yourself with people who think like you, think big, but believe in you. And it'll do wonders for your life.